ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 7, Text 15. Atha aham amara acharyam agadha dishanam dvijam brahmana. Did I miss something? Oh, no, that's part of the, I'm sorry, that's part of the translation there. Prasadayishye nishitaha shishna sparshan tacharanam sparshan. Athaham amaracharyam agada dishanam dvijam prasadayishye nishita shishna shishna tacharanam sprashan athaham amaracharyam agada dishanam dvijam prasadayishye nishita shishna tacharanam sprashan athaham amaracharyam agada dishanam dvijam prasadayishye nishita shishna tacharanam sprashan. Ladies, please. Atha, therefore. Aham, I. Amara Acharyam, the spiritual master of the demigods. Agada Dishyanam, whose spiritual knowledge is deep. Vijam, the perfect Brahman. Prasadayushye, I shall please. Nishita, without duplicity. Shirshna, with my head. Tatcharanam, his lotus feet. Sprashan, touching. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. King Indra said, therefore, with great frankness and without duplicity, I shall now bow my head at the lotus feet of Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods. Because he is in the mode of goodness, he is fully aware of all knowledge and is the best of the Brahmins. Now I shall touch his lotus feet and offer my obeisances unto him to try to satisfy him. Please repeat. King Indra said, therefore, with great frankness and without duplicity, I shall now bow my head at the lotus feet of Brihaspati, the spiritual master of who? Yes, the demigods. Because he is in the mode of goodness, he is fully aware of all knowledge and is the best of the Brahmins. Now I shall touch his lotus feet and offer my obeisances unto him to try to satisfy him. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Coming to his senses, King Indra realized that he was not a very sincere disciple of his spiritual master, Brihaspati. Therefore, he decided that henceforward he would be nishita, non-duplicitous. Nishita, sirshna, tachcharanam, sprishan. He decided to touch his head to the feet of his spiritual master. From this example, we should learn this principle enunciated by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasado, yasya prasadan nagati kutopi. And we sing this every morning. By the mercy of the spiritual master, one is benedicted by the mercy of Krishna. Without the grace of the spiritual master, one cannot make any advancement. I'll read it again. So important. Without the grace of the spiritual master, one cannot make any advancement. A disciple should never be a hypocrite or be unfaithful to his spiritual master. In Srimad Bhagavatam 11:17-27, the spiritual master is also called Acharya. Acharyam mam vijaniyan. The Supreme Personality of Godhead says that one should respect the spiritual master, accepting him as the Lord himself. Navamanyeta karachit. One should not disrespect the Acharya at any time. Namartya buddhya sutyeta. One should never think the Acharya an ordinary person. Familiarity sometimes breeds contempt, but one should be very careful in one's dealings with the Acharya. Agada Dishyanam Dvijam. The Acharya is a perfect Brahman and has unlimited intelligence in guiding the activities of his disciple. Therefore, Krishna advises in Bhagavad Gita 4:34, Tadvidi pranipatena pariprajnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattvadarshana, which means, just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. One should fully surrender unto the spiritual master, and with service, sevaya, one should approach him for further spiritual enlightenment. Omagina timiranyasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur unmulitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. So here we see that King Indra, king of the demigods, has realized that he has committed a very grave mistake, a mistake that he should not have committed based upon his lofty position. He's a leader, and a leader must set a standard for all others who are lesser or smaller to follow. As the Bhagavad Gita says, whatever a great man does, common men follow. And whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. So it is a duty of a leader to set a perfect example, for whatever he does, everyone will follow. And if he commits offenses, as Indra did, then others will feel free to commit the same offenses. That is why it is so important that anyone who is in a managerial position must be extra careful, extra vigilant about what he does, what he says, even what he thinks, and how he comports himself, just walking on the street, talking to the devotees, talking to non-devotees. He's always on, you might say, in the spotlight, in the limelight. He can't escape it, and therefore his responsibility is very high, very great. And anyone who is assuming larger responsibilities than what we might call a general or ordinary devotee may be assuming, we need to give extra respect to such a person. It's very important to see that this person has taken on so much on his head. For example, we have in our own temple here, he probably doesn't want to hear me glorify him because of his humility, but Savasi does a wonderful job, and he has to balance so many factors. So many services must get filled, and he has to keep a track, not only of who's filling them, but are they being filled properly? Are devotees performing their service correctly? Are they doing their service devotionally? Or are they just doing it in a half-hearted, indifferent, uncaring way? So he not only has to see that others are doing this, but he also has to make sure that he is setting an example for doing this. So therefore, when the temple president or a spiritual master enters a temple, or a very senior person who is assuming higher responsibilities enters the temple, then it is generally the Vedic etiquette to offer respects to him or her, only because that person is very special. Special in the sense that Krishna has appointed him or her to perform a particular duty which involves lots of responsibility. Which responsibility means that you can either make or break other people. If you don't perform your responsibility correctly, sweetly, lovingly, if you don't do this, you don't set the proper example, then you can arouse in persons, devotees, anger and hatred and jealousy and envy. So therefore, it is very important for a person in a leadership position to do it rightly, correctly, and to set the example for others to do the same. And if others do the same, then generally, if all are observing the proper etiquette, then there will be, generally speaking, a mood of harmony, respect, and honor, and appreciation. If, of course, a leader doesn't respect his charges, the persons whom he's accepted responsibility to take care of and to lead, if he doesn't care for them, if he doesn't, he's not interested in them, if he doesn't take a certain amount of pride in helping them to grow and develop, then what will happen is that is the way the devotees will act towards other devotees. You will have coldness, you will have indifference, you will have casualness, and devotees will not appreciate this great, valuable, wonderful, cherishable, treasurable service called Krishna conscious activities. These are not to be taken lightly or indifferently or thoughtlessly. They are the most valuable service in the world. And each of us as devotees have to be always thinking of, how did I get into such a fortunate position? What have I done? I can't think of anything I've done. I've done so many foul, so many unfortunate, and so many evil things in the course of my life. And yet Krishna, out of his causeless mercy, has sent this great, great saint, Srila Prabhupada, here to teach me how to get out of the miseries and how to overcome all of these different emotions and feelings of a lower nature. What did I do? How did I merit this? I don't see the merit. It's all your grace. Grace means we're getting something we don't deserve. And if you get something that you don't deserve, all the more do we thank, all the more do we appreciate, all the more are we grateful to the Supreme Lord and the Param Guru, Srila Prabhupada. We've gotten what we don't deserve. Quite often, when we do service and sometimes people praise us or compliment us or applaud us, we begin to think that, yes, we're worthy of this service. After all, I'm doing it so well. People like it. People are applauding me. They're glorifying me. So I must be important. I must be valuable. I might even be superior to other persons doing the same service. Soon as this idea creeps in, all hell breaks loose. This is not what we want to think. It is not what we want to feel. We are always in debt to the Supreme Lord and the Spiritual Master. The debt is eternal. We can never pay back the mercy that we have received. And the joy, the peace, the happiness, the strength, the determination that we get from the example of the Spiritual Master and those whom he has entrusted to lead others, it's incalculable. It's inestimable. It's so high, so great, we cannot see the end of it. And if we take this position, this is a position of humility. This is what humility is all about. It's not merely bowing down. It's not merely throwing yourself on the floor. It's not merely walking around with a long face. Humility is the feeling that I am unworthy of all that I have gotten, and let me at least try in my bumbling, mumbling fashion to try to pay back the unrepayable. So one never feels puffed up. He doesn't feel proud. He doesn't feel great. He doesn't feel glorious. He feels rather small, insignificant, tiny, infinitesimal, because he's gotten so much and he has given so little. So when we are praised and glorified and honored and applauded, our position should be, I haven't given enough. I haven't done well enough. I could have done it so much better if I had taken real shelter of the Spiritual Master and the Supreme Lord. If I had begged them during the course of the service, please help me, please guide me, please enliven me, enlighten me, show me how to do it better. If I had taken that position, which is a rather humble position, the proud position is I can do it well. I don't need any help. I don't need any guidance. I'm going to do it perfect. But the humble devotee, he takes shelter of Krishna. He prays. He cries out. He begs. I can't do it well. I can't do it well enough. I can't do it to meet and to match your glory. So whatever I do, however well I do it, it's going to fall short. But I'm trying to make it fall as little short as possible by your mercy. Because you are the ability in man. And by your grace, my ability can be increased for the pleasure of your own heart. This is the purpose of devotional service, to give pleasure to the heart of the Supreme Lord. And we can do that in this wonderful interpersonal exchange in which the devotee prays and cries for and begs for the help. And when he gets that help, he's so satisfied and so glad because he can do it better than he did it before. So I want to just backtrack a little bit. This was more or less of an introduction leading up to Indra. Now here we see in this particular chapter, excuse me, here we see in this particular chapter, Indra is sitting on a throne, and all around him are demigods and sub-demigods and sub-sub-demigods, Vidyadharas and Charanas and Apsaras and Gandharvas, and so many others. There are literally hundreds of people in the assembly hall. And Indra is sitting on his throne, and he's enjoying their adoration. He's enjoying their glorification. They're standing up. Their arms are raised or put together. And they're showing the proper respect for their leader. And then the door opens, and who comes in but Brihaspati, the spiritual master of all the demigods, and especially of Indra. And so the devotees, they part, and Brihaspati walks down the aisle, and Indra sits there, smiling, doing nothing except just smiling. Well, isn't it nice? My spiritual master has come. Maybe he's going to glorify me also? Is that what I'm going to get? Spiritual master stops, looks at Indra. Indra looks back at him as if there's nothing else to do but just look back at my spiritual master. Spiritual master shakes his head, turns around, and walks out the door. Immediately, Indra gets the message. Sometimes the message can be much stronger in silence than in loud, thunderous reproaches. So he walks out. Indra knows that he's committed a very, very big offense. It is called Guru Aparad. The first thing that he should have done when the spiritual master came in is he should have stood up. Everybody else was standing up for him. Why shouldn't he stand up for his spiritual master? He didn't stand up. Similar to Romaharshana Sutta, and Lord Balaram took a little piece of grass and just cut off his head for his aparad. Fortunately, Brihaspati was more gentle in this situation. He could have cursed Indra big time, but he chose not to because he was a very compassionate sage. And besides, he was not guided to do this. So you not only stand up, but you step aside and you put your hand out towards the seat, and you offered the seat to your Guru Maharaj. Maharaj, please have a seat. And the Guru sits down. The next thing that one does is that the Guru is seated. One offers obeisances to the Guru. And then the next thing is that since Indra was in the position of leadership, he orders some beverage. A beverage comes in, something very tasty, delicious, which is offered to the Guru, and also what they call argya, which is a mixture of rice and honey and some herbs. It's mixed together, which the Guru is offered. And besides this, Indra sits on the side. He sits down beneath, his head lower than the spiritual master, indicating quite clearly that he's insignificant, that all his power, all his glory, all his greatness is due to the mercy of the spiritual master, as we read here. Yasya prasada, Bhagavat prasada, yasya prasada, nagatika topi. By the mercy of the spiritual master, one receives the benediction of Krishna. Without the grace of the spiritual master, one cannot make any advancement. Therefore, let me offer my humble obeisances unto the lotus feet of such a spiritual master. At least 3 times a day, let me do this. So Indra did none of this. And furthermore, he should have ordered a basin with water to wash the feet of the spiritual master. Look at Bali Maharaj, look at Vamanadeva. Vamanadeva came into the big arena, and although Sukracharya says, you better watch out, this guy's powerful, he's potent, he's out to get you and take everything you own away. He didn't care. He's a Brahmin, I will treat him as a Brahmin. So, the basin was brought in, he washed the feet of Vamanadeva, the Supreme Lord in the form of a dwarf. And then he did one thing further. He took the water and he poured it over his head. Just see his devotion, his love. And his grandfather, Prahlad Maharaj, of course, would have done the same thing because that's the devotional mentality. But Indra did none of these things. And he realized after the spiritual master left the room that he had committed a very, very bad offense. He had offended his guru. This is like, it's often likened to a mad elephant going through a garden of beautiful flowers. Well, an elephant doesn't care about how beautiful those flowers are. He just thump, 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 and just steps on them, and there they are. The beautiful flowers that were growing, down to nothing. Similarly, the creeper in our heart of devotional love and service, if we commit these kinds of offenses, that creeper, it's as if you've just smashed it. And it can take many days, weeks, months, years, sometimes to recover. When a devotee acts very proud, this is called pride, false pride. When one acts falsely proudly, then what happens is that the potency or the power, the grace that one has received from the Supreme Lord to do some of the amazing things that we do, it's withdrawn. It's taken away. And little by little, more and more we commit offenses, more and more grace is taken away. Until finally we feel very empty, vacant, vacuous, and very displeased. Now there's a need. Every human being has a need for pleasure. And when we are getting the grace of the Supreme Lord, we are receiving direct love from the Lord into the soul. And the soul, when it receives that love, it's very much like a lotus receiving the sunshine. It opens up, it blossoms. So when the soul receives the love of the Supreme Lord as a grace, as a blessing, then the devotee feels very uplifted. And there are different degrees of how much love the Lord will bless the devotee with. As they surrender unto me, Krishna says, I reward them accordingly. So, in the case of Srila Prabhupada, who's so so wonderful, who's so compassionate, who's so charitable and loving, he will get an enormous amount of love. And that love that he gets in his heart, he will give it out. Because that's the nature of transcendental love. It doesn't stay in. It literally begs to go out. And the devotee feels that desire, and he wants to spread it in the form of whether it's book distribution, whether it's cooking a beautiful prasadam or a cake, or whether it's worshipping the deity, or whether it's just doing business and making donations to the temple. Whatever it is, the devotee has a feeling, very much like a woman who is pregnant, and she's come to term, there is a desire to get the baby out. It's an uncomfortable feeling. Similarly, the devotee filled with pure transcendental love wants to get that love out in the form of loving service, in the form of some loving gift, some loving blessing that he wants to give. And it can come in any manner or form, in the smallest of things and in the largest of things. So this is the nature of transcendental bliss. However, we sometimes may not feel in the mood to give because it's one of those days in which we're not getting very much transcendental bliss or peace or strength from the Lord. Nonetheless, if we've made a vow to serve Krishna, do or die, and sacrifice our lives for the pleasure of Krishna, it doesn't matter what I'm feeling. It only matters what Krishna is feeling, what he will get. So let me do this service, whether I feel good, whether I feel bad, whether I feel indifferent. It's something that Krishna likes, and so you do it. You do it with your whole heart to the degree that it's possible. And by doing it during those days when we're not able to really generate or engender much love and much strength and much peace and and much determination, you get more credit on those days. You get more credit on those days than you do on the day when it's simple, when it's easy. And there's why do you get more? Because it's more difficult to do it on those days. So we should not think that because we may not be at our best, or even our service may not be at our best, that Krishna is not appreciating this. Actually, he's appreciating even more because it's difficult. It's a trial. It's a tribulation. And then on top of that, you may get insulted. You may get reprimanded. You may get reproached. So many things. And it's all piling up. And it's almost sometimes you feel like you just want to scream out, "No more!" So, but with self-restraint and understanding the higher principle, one holds that back and prays to the Lord for guidance and help and direction. So this is the problem. Indra had pride. Sometimes when we read these books, it seems like that's happening to Indra, and that how can that happen to me? I'm not on the level of Indra. I'm not any big-time leader. Everyone who's come into this world has come in with one purpose, namely, to lord it over this material world and through the process of lordship to enjoy like crazy. If I can remember the Queen Puranjani when she was met the Brahmin who was Krishna, and she was lamenting, she was sorrowing over the death of her husband. Krishna said, as I said, in the form of the Brahmin, "My dear friend, even though you do not immediately recognize me, can't you remember that in the past you had a very intimate friend? Unfortunately, you gave up my company to accept a position as an enjoyer of this material world." This is a quote from the Bhagavatam. So that's what we all did. Each and every one of us is given a certain amount of dominion or sovereignty or lordship. Everyone is. Even if you have no position, let's just say here, if there's a cockroach that goes by you, you have lordship. You can either step on them or you can pick them up and throw them out. It's a form of lordship. So everyone is given some degree. And even in that little degree of lordship, where you can kill the cockroach and say, "Just see my power." Or you can take the cockroach and throw it out and say, "Well, he deserves to live also. He's one of God's creatures." So in any of our situations, this mentality of "I am the Lord of all I survey," it's always with us. And the only way we can get rid of it is by developing the quality of humility. And that is, it's like a fathomless ocean. One may say, "Oh Lord, help me to become lower than the straw on the street." And that's a good position to be in. But as a person progresses in humility, he wants to go lower than the straw on the street. He wants to go lower than the deepest ocean in existence. And even then, he wants to go through. He wants to crash through that crevice. There is no end because he feels that God is so great, so wonderful, that he should be, that the devotee has to feel his true position, which is 1/10,000th of the tip of a hair. And you got to go way down deep to feel that position. And some of our saints, as we have in Srila Prabhupada, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, they had this incredible degree of humility. The way they spoke, the way they interacted. Their whole mood was one of total devotional service. It was a mood of service. And they never felt important, never felt valuable, never felt that they were learned even though they were. Whatever learning they had, they attributed to the Supreme Lord, to Lord Chaitanya, who gave them this. Therefore, they never could take credit for all the applause, the adoration, the profit, the distinction. When it came to them, they got a lot of it, a lot of applause. They were very learned. They were very illustrious. They were very illuminating. So they got lots of applause. But what did they do with it? Did they keep it? Did they swallow it? Did they say, well, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I am. They did more than that. As soon as they got it, they gave it away. They couldn't keep it because they never felt that it belongs to them. Whatever praise, whatever glory, whatever applause, whatever adoration, whatever distinction, profit they got, they knew instantly, this is not mine. It belongs to Krishna. Let it go back to Krishna. The applause, the praise, the the compliments, I don't deserve them. What they're complimenting me for is an ability that Lord Sri Krishna gave me. Therefore, this he deserves. Therefore, I offer it to you, Lord. Let me not have any of that which will make me prouder and prouder and prouder than I am. So please, do not let me languish and waste away in pride. There's a very, I came across a quote about pride. I thought I'd just read it. It says, pride is the breath of hell that quenches the light of wisdom and withers the rose of grace. Very nice. So, that's exactly what it does. It destroys us. And before we go to sleep every night, and when we wake up in the morning, the first thing that should be after offering respects to the Supreme Lord and the Spiritual Master, we have to beg them, I'm so proud. I'm so conceited. I'm so seeking glory. I'm so vain. Please take it away. I can't do it on my own. You are pure, Krishna. You have none of this. So I beg you to please dissolve it. Eradicate it. Take it away because it is creating a bridge between you and me. It's keeping us apart. And it's keeping me apart from performing the level, the kind, the sweetness of service that I would like. So please, I beg you, my Lord, take away all those anarthas. Take them away. Enable me to serve you purely, sweetly, without any sense of pomp, without any sense of greatness, arrogance, or contempt for others. Help me to serve you as one who really is insignificant, who really has nothing except what you give him, and enable me to go on serving in this manner, seeking nothing for myself, but always seeking only and completely love for you and pleasure to you. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So, if there is some question. Yes, Ganesh Prabhu. Oh, okay.
Modern thinkers will tell you, come on, you got to take a little pride in yourself. You got to keep a little for yourself. They talk about humility, but they say, nah, you gotta fan yourself a little bit. You know, what about me? And this I'm asking, is there room? How do you engage pride in Krishna consciousness?
Very nice question. So, what I have described so far is false pride. And that is something we don't want. But there is also a thing called true pride or real pride, and that is something we do want. Now, what's the difference? I'm going to talk about real pride now, based upon your question. The very fact that I know I'm part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, that Krishna is my father, he's my mother, he's my brother, he's my everything. He's my supplier, he's my protector, He's all, and He is the greatest, the highest, the best, the biggest, the grandest, the everythingest. So He's all of that and then some. I'm a part of Him. I'm so proud to be a part of the greatest of the greatest. So yes, I feel very big, I feel large, I feel great, I feel tremendous because I'm connected with the greatest. But on the other hand, He is so much greater than me that I'm still very tiny, small, and insignificant. But like a little child, his father owns a big mansion, and the kid walks around saying, well, my father, he owns this whole place, and I'm his son. I can walk anywhere I want. I can pick the flowers if I want. I'm a part of this, and this is a part of me. Therefore, this is a good pride because it's not based upon trying to feel superior to others, which is what I was talking about. As long as we're trying to feel superior to others, our brother, our sister, our co-workers, our co-students, you're in trouble. Because that kind of pride will cause difficulty, it will cause envy, it will cause anger, it will cause ultimately hatred, and it leads to wars. That's why we don't want false pride. But to be proud of being a part of Krishna's camp, that's so wonderful. Because you know you're small, but you know your father is big, and you're happy to have a place in his home. I say, okay. Anything else? Yes, sir. Sachi Tanoy. Yeah, he's coming with the mic.
Lord Indra, the spiritual master, and how he got, he committed an offense, and he's chastised later on. But I was thinking that I want your opinion of what you advise to this. Like in a society where we have, let's say, Prabhupada initiated about 5,000 disciples, 500 might be active, directly active in service. Some of them are gurus, GVCs.
A little louder, please.
GVCs, gurus, sannyasis. It's difficult in the when the guru physically is not present to actually be chastised directly or to humble the devotee. Because after all, you just have a god brother, even if he's a sannyasi or guru, he might not chastise you, he might just give you an advice. So I'm asking your advice. What would you advise for devotees in that position where the guru is not physically present?
Where the guru is what?
Not physically present.
Oh.
And how do you get corrected, or how do you get...
Yes, the guru is not physically present, but Krishna is present. And as long as if you don't believe that Krishna is present, you're in trouble. Because it means you have to come to that stage. First thing is, Krishna is everywhere present in the super soul. He's in your heart, he's in everyone's heart, he's everywhere. So that's the first thing. The demigods are also over. They're in the air, they're in the fire, they're in the water, they're everywhere. Our business is to please the Supreme Lord. And since Supreme Lord is everywhere, then it is our business to remain and become more humble as time goes on. We should not forget the greatness of God. We should not forget the fact that God is omnipresent. We should not forget just because the guru is here to and now he's not here to chastise you, you have to chastise yourself. How do you chastise yourself? You read what he expects of you. And you ask yourself, am I living up to the expectations that have been placed upon me? If I'm not living up to them, then I have to chastise myself. How do you chastise yourself? When you commit some grave offense, fast for a day. Do some difficulty. Go out on Sankirtan for 14 hours. Or go out on Harinam for 14 hours. Do something that will indicate to your own mind that you have committed some offense. And that little bit of penance will help us to remember. Whenever there's pain, you remember. So it will help us to remember that we did something wrong. And that remembrance, if the occasion arises, the temptation again comes, you will remember what you did. And you remember the penance that you did. And you won't do it. Because unless there is some means... by which we can restrain ourselves. And memory is the only way. You have to remember what you did. And if you just, I know many people commit offenses and they say, I'm sorry, but they're really not sorry. They just say it. It sounds very spiritual. And then they go and do it again. Just like the people go to confession, they don't really confess with the heart. So it's very important to really feel the pain that you gave. If you hurt somebody, feel it. And if you don't feel it, then give yourself a little pain. And if you give yourself a little pain, it will be a reminder to not do that again. We should take our relationships very seriously, because if we don't, Krishna is ready and waiting to give us the necessary punishment to awaken us to the fact that we must act harmoniously, sweetly, lovingly, and serviceably to each other. If we don't do that, then we're missing the whole point of Krishna consciousness. Is that what you want? Okay, thank you. Yes, Prabhuji.
Indra is known as a devotee, but his behavior in this particular situation is demoniac. So is there any difference between a devotee that behaves demoniacally...
A devotee that what?
Behaves demoniacally. A devotee that behaves in a demoniac way.
Yes, go ahead. I didn't hear.
A devotee that behaves demoniacally and a demon that behaves demoniacally. So, they both might behave demoniacally. So what's the difference? Is there any difference? Because his behavior at this particular time is a demoniac.
Yes.
Pride is demoniac
yes.
quality.
Yes.
You know, in the 16th chapter, pride is a demoniac quality. So what's the difference? Is a devotee in a better situation, behaving in a demoniac way, or like...
Well, first of all, it's a little worse for the devotee, because devotee means that he follows the orders of God. That's what a devotee really is. He not only chants Hare Krishna, but he follows the rules, he follows the orders, and he knows the rules, and he doesn't make excuses to obviate or to step over the rules. He follows them. So a higher degree of responsibility is on such a devotee. The act is the same, but the degree of development is not the same. So the devotee may have to suffer more only because of the fact that he knew better. Whereas many demons, they don't even know better. They think that this is okay conduct. You know, to talk this way, to insult somebody, to put somebody down. They think this is okay. They haven't reached that level of sensitivity yet. So Krishna may give them less of a punishment. Their activities with each other, the demons, they will in themselves cause lots of friction and difficulties and problems. So Krishna doesn't have to do very much. But in the case of the devotee, Krishna is ready to try to help them. So by taking away, withdrawing the grace, the devotee feels empty, he feels helpless, he feels like you're alone. And you don't, God is as if he's left me. I don't know if anyone has experienced that, but it's a very incredibly frightening feeling when you feel so totally deserted and alone that Krishna doesn't care for you anymore. It's not something desirable. So that is a very heavy punishment, and it's proper for a person who knows better. It's like the Brahmins and the Sudras. Brahmin, for doing the same offense that a Sudra does, he gets punished heavier. Okay, I think I've gone way over time. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.